But anyway, I'm glad you're here this morning. I want to start with Psalm 106 this morning. If you want to be finding that, Psalm 106 is the passage that we'll look at. And thinking about these anniversaries this morning, I think Pastor had something in the bulletin about the fact that my Betty and I have also been married 57 years, coming up on 58 in December. I told one of the ladies I was only 3 when she married me, and nobody believes that, but I tell it anyway. But when we hit our 50th, I said to her, I said, you just say where you want to go. We're going to take 2 weeks, and we're just going to have a 2-week vacation. Well, she first said Hawaii, and I told her, I said, now look, I said, you know, if we fly from Nashville to Los Angeles, that's 3.5 hours or 4, depending on wind and stuff. But I said, when we get to L.A., it's still a 6-hour flight to Honolulu. And I told her, I said, you know you can't. And Betts has some things that flare, some back issues and stuff. And I said, we can't. We just can't do that. I know you'll be sick when we get there. So she said, all right, let's do the Rocky Mountains. Now, we'd been to the Rockies before, but we'd not vacationed there. And there's a difference. You know, if you go and you're preaching and having services every night and part of the days, why? So we took 2 weeks. We flew from Nashville to Albuquerque, got a car, and drove up through the Rockies all the way to Denver. Took 2 weeks to do that. I did preach the Sundays, three weeks of Sundays we were out there. But anyway, we had just gotten airborne. You folks have an anniversary like this. We had just gotten airborne out of Nashville, and I reached down under the seat and got my little black bag, pulled it out, and I was rifling through it, and I pulled out a folder, and I said, we've almost got our 50th in, right? And she said, right. I said, I've got some papers here I want you to look at and consider signing while we're on this trip. And she said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, we've almost got our 50th in. I said, I thought, since we're on this trip, I'd see if I could sign you up for another 50. And this girl, I mean, she's sitting here beside me. I mean, this is my high school sweetheart. Met her first day of 10th grade. And we've been married at that point 50 years. And I'm saying to her, I want to sign you up for another 50 years. She stuck her hand out and she said, well, let me look at it and I'll pray about it. So some of you may have some things like that you want to do here. You're hitting these big anniversaries too. But it's neat, you know, to be married all these years and still happy about it is just pretty special. Well, Psalm 106. I'll talk to you a little bit later about getting the paper. We'll give you copies. And if you're not getting the paper, I'm going to make it so easy for you to get it. If you don't get it, well, you're backslidden. But anyway, all right. It is my joy and delight to be here, by the way. I get to travel in a lot of places. Last year, made 58 trips in churches all across America. And years past, I've traveled outside the country, but I've stopped doing that now, just staying inside the Continental 48 once in a while to Alaska. But anyway, we'll look forward to getting the paper as people all over the world do. Psalm 106, right at the top of the chapter. I've had allergies every day of my life. And sometimes, spring of the year, they get a little out of hand. And that's kind of the case now. So you'll be patient with me. I appreciate it. Psalm 106, verse number 1 says, praise ye the Lord. Oh, give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endureth forever. Who can utter the mighty acts of the Lord? Who can show forth all his praise? Blessed are they that keep judgment, and he that doeth righteousness at all times. Remember me, O Lord, with the favor that thou bearest unto thy people. O visit me with thy salvation, that I may see the good of thy chosen, that I may rejoice in the gladness of thy nation, that I may glory with thine inheritance. Now, this chapter is a much longer chapter, but starting in verse number 6 and continuing all the way to the end, there is a rehearsal of a lot of the history of Israel, their ups, their downs, and they had both ups and downs. They had good leaders, bad leaders, good times, bad times. And pretty much good leadership reflected good times, bad leadership reflected bad times. A lot of that's laid out in the 48 verses from verse 6 on. Now, the first two verses basically are a statement of rejoicing. The psalmist is saying we've got a lot to be grateful for and we owe it to the Lord. You get to verses 4 and 5, and he has a little bit of a prayer where he says, Lord, remember me. Here's some things we need. But that little verse 3 is the one that has my attention this morning. And here, let me read it again. It says, blessed are they that keep judgment, and he that doeth righteousness at all times. Oftentimes in the Bible, when the word judgment is used, it's talking about the final judgments, or it's talking about God's judgment upon things, or God vents judgment. It's not the case here. You look at the verse very carefully, it says that they who keep judgment, talking about people, who keep judgment will be blessed of God. So what are we looking at here? Well, it's like this. If I were to say to you, what's your judgment about the weather this morning? What's your judgment about what it's going to do later in the day? Can you give me your judgment on the state of affairs in Rhode Island? I'm asking you for your opinion. I'm asking you for how you value those things. And this passage, basically, when it uses the word judgment here, it's talking about basic principles of truth, your value system, your worldview, all of that. Blessed are they that keep judgment. And if you look at that as principles, and he that doeth righteousness, talking about the practices that emanate out of those principles. So let me back up and just a little bit more here to introduce this. Most people, whether we're in Rhode Island or Washington State, Florida, crossing Canada, wherever we are, most people are governed by the following things. What's popular? If it's popular, hey, why not? A lot of people, they're making decisions every hour of the day and night based on their preferences. Just what I prefer. You don't like it, too bad. It's just what I prefer, so I do what I prefer. A lot of people are basing their decisions and governing their life. Yes, popularity, preference, but a lot of people are doing it based on what they see personalities doing. They're heroes. Can be sports figures, can be politicians, it can be educators, it can be preachers. But they look at another personality and they say, that's what that guy's doing, that's what that gal's doing. And they just, you know, it's monkey see, monkey do. You know, that's one of those famous principles, right? Monkey see, monkey do. All right. So we've got popularity and preference and personalities. Oh, and don't forget the pocketbook. A lot of people are totally governed by their pocketbook. I mean, morality be hanged. I mean, if it's good for the pocketbook, hey, you know. And lots of people will do anything for a buck. So we got popularity and preference and personalities and pocket. Oh, and don't forget pressure. Pressure. Man, the money's tight. I've been sick. We live in New England. Pressure, pressure, pressure. And a lot of people do things based on those pressures. Here's another one, peers. And you know those kids that went downstairs and the teenagers in here, they're not the only ones that have peer pressure. We all have peer pressure. And And it's just, well, you know, everybody at work's doing this. Everybody at school's doing this. This is what the folks in our town do. And so rather than operate by principle and do what's right, our peers sometimes dictate things to us. One more little list here in my list. Pleasure. Pleasure. I mean, I know I'm supposed to go to church on Sunday, but after all, the Red Sox are playing and somebody gave me tickets. Pleasure. Or, you know, maybe other things. Now, so you say, well, it's true. We all have peers. We all have pressures. We all have a pocketbook, a personality in our life. Yeah, all of that. And all of that can be handled if we have principles. I'm sure you probably watch some of the news. I hope you're not watching ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, CNN. I hope you're not watching any of those networks. And literally, I have scratched long since, years ago. If you were to ask me who the anchor is on some of those networks, I couldn't tell you. I know a few of them because they get repeated on some other channels. And by the way, I don't trust Fox entirely either. They have been going more liberal in recent days. So you got to watch what's going on the tube. Big time. But if you're just gathering up stuff from there, from that, you know, you're going to wind up with a lot of things, a lot of opinions, a lot of ideas. And you'll see people coming in front of the cameras. They're looking right at you. And you remember when they were on yesterday and they told you exactly the opposite yesterday from what they're telling you today. And why do they do that? Because they're unprincipled. I mean, some of our politicians that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they were pro-life. Now they're pro-abortion. What happened? Their principles went missing. They discovered maybe that wherever they're trying to get elected, I mean, whether it's city council or whatever it is, they've discovered that, hey, if I just lean this way, it'll get votes. So they're unprincipled. Now, what we have in this passage, I'm calling a twin formula for blessing. Because he says, blessed. It's right at the beginning. And then he talks about the principles, keeping judgment, finding out what the values are and keeping those, and then doing that at all times. So we're talking about right principles and then upright practices. If I get my principles in place, my practices will be fine. Now, here's what happens. Some people never get principles in place, so their practices are all over the board all the time. You never know where they're going to land. There are other people who get their practices right, but they have no clue as to the principle, and you say, well, how do they do that? They're just doing what their daddy told them, or they're just doing what the pastor says. Now, if that's as far as you get and you're getting things right, hey, God bless you, I'll take it. But I'd like to get you a little further down the trail than that. I'd like for you to get to the place where you will do the right practice even when your daddy's dead and gone or when the pastor is out of town. Betty and I have two children. They've long since grown, have families of their own. But I remember when we sent them off to college. And we hoped everything was good. We hoped that we had them ready to be adults. And it wasn't too long until the challenges began to come to them. And they would call us and say, well, we had this to face, that to face. And then they'd tell us what they did. Betty and I'd hang the phone up and we'd say, oh, wow. I mean, we were so excited because they were plugging in what we had taught them. Now, sometimes the people you've counted on to help you are not handy. That's why I want you to learn Bible principles. If you learn Bible principles, then whether anybody's around to advise you or not, you can still do what God expects you to do and mainly do right. So here's what we have to do. Principles have to be taught. Nobody was born with principles. My son and daughter were dumb as a box of rocks the day they were born, and so were yours. They had everything to learn. And the principles that they need have to be taught. That's why we have to communicate with them. And as a result of learning the principles, then the right practices can be developed. Now, principles are foundational. If you get the foundation in, you can build a superstructure on top of it. A few years back, I was over in New York City and went to the top of the Empire State Building. And it was rush hour in the afternoon, 21 of us on a little tiny elevator, and it got stuck. And we went through about a half hour before they were able to get it moving, and when they got it moving, it was chug-a-lug, 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 and the doors wouldn't open. And finally, they got it to move all the way down to the bottom in the basement, and I discovered that there's a whole lot of the Empire State Building underground. And they've got room to work down there, but what I'm saying is there's a lot of that building in the ground. The reason that superstructure can stay up is because it's got a foundation. Now, remember Jesus, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, he had two parables. One guy built on sand, another guy built on rock. I call them Sandy and Rocky. Mr. Sandy didn't do so well. He built out of the wrong kind of stuff. The winds came, storms came, and man, stuff blew away. While I was still in college back 600-800 years ago, Betty and I had just been married a couple of years, and I was going to university, and at the same time, I was pastor of a small church. And we had a family join our church. This was in West Tennessee. The town where we were, where I was pastor, was about 5 miles from the Tennessee River, which is a major river in that part of the country. And we had a family come and join who lived right on the Tennessee River. They were a Greek family. They'd been in this country for a little while, but still sounded very Greek when they spoke. And in fact, I'll never forget, his name was John Papajohn. And Brother Papajohn said to me one day, he said, Pastor, he said, would you and Mrs. Smith come and take a meal at our home? And well, yes, we would. So we made a date and went out. And I will never forget, I saw something in that house I have never saw before and never seen since. When we walked in, and their house was built right on the bluff above the water. I mean, 50, 60 feet out their back door, there was a bluff that went straight down like 60 or 80 feet to the water. But that bluff is solid rock. And when we walked in the front door of their house, guess what? No carpet, no tile, no floor. They had drilled into the rock and anchored their home into the rock, solid rock of that bluff. Now, I haven't been back there in years, but I'm telling you, if you go there, everything else on that bluff may have blown away, but I'm predicting that house hasn't because it's anchored in rock. Now, you get your life anchored in the rock of this book, and I don't think it'll matter what kind of winds blow. You'll be okay. You'll make it. So whenever we talk about principles, basic foundational principles, say, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Principles. I'm glad you ask, because I picked out a few I just want to throw at you. Here's some basic Bible principles. In Matthew chapter 7, there's a verse that says, therefore all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. We call that one the golden rule. Now, you say, well, what does that mean? It means exactly what it says. For example, see this beautiful head of hair?
A little bit.
I used to have a whole lot more, but I still got some. Now, it may surprise you to know, this morning, I got up, I washed my hair, which I do every day because I have a very oily face, and I combed it, and then I sprayed it so that it is set in concrete. You say, why'd you do that? Because I did not want Pastor Chapman to be embarrassed when I came in with him this morning. In fact, I didn't want to be embarrassed myself by looking like something. So what did I do? I combed my hair, I sprayed it, and I like for it to be that way. Now, if you come up to me and you take a hand and go like that and muss it all up, I'm not going to like that. In fact, for a little bit, I'm not going to like you. And you say, well, what are you trying to say? What I'm trying to say is, because I wouldn't like that, I'm not going to come muss your hair up. Right. Let's put it another way. Let's put it another way. I would not like it if you came and yelled at me. So I'm not going to yell at you. Betty and I made an agreement early in our marriage that we were not going to yell and scream at our house. Even after we got kids, we're just not going to yell and scream. In fact, we never let the kids do that. I mean, they would, they tried it a few times, but they learned that that's not what we do at our house. We made it unpleasant enough for them that they learned, no, we're not doing it that way. Now, I have 34 people who work at the Sword of the Lord every day. I tell them when we hire people, unless you're about to hurt yourself, neither I nor anyone else in supervision here will be yelling at you. You do something wrong, we'll talk to you. We'll bring you in the office, sit down privately. We'll deal with you. We don't have any problem at all being transparent and being open and telling you what you need to know. But we're not going to yell and scream at you. And you say, well, and by the way, not at church either. Not at church either. Well, that's just not the way we do. You say, why not? Because we have a Bible principle that says I should do to you as I want to have done to me. It's in the Bible, Matthew 7:12. Here's another one that fits right along with it. It's found in Ephesians chapter 4 that says, and be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Ephesians chapter 4. I mean, downstairs somewhere in the months ahead, that part of that verse, and be ye kind, will be taught to the little toddlers. We'll teach them to be ye kind, and then those of us who have gotten to be grown people, I mean, even if we've been down there teaching it, sometimes we'll forget that that's supposed to work even after you get out of the toddler department. I mean, we're talking about Bible principles here. Just common kindness. You say, where should we start that? Start at home. I guess I talk too much about Betty, but I married way above my pay grade, and I'm pretty proud of her, so you'll forgive me for talking about her, but one way that she and I put this and how we deal with one another, we try to out honey each other. Literally, we try to out honey each other. Just being nice to one another, being good to one another. You say, well, listen. I would not stand here and try to tell you that she's perfect or that I'm perfect. But what we do, when one of us has a little bit of acid on our tongue and says something, we clean it up so quick, we clean it up quick. We don't let that go. And the reason that we do not is because we got the Lord driving us, but at the same time, we love each other and we don't do damage to somebody that we love. And this verse simply says, be kind one another. Here's another Bible principle that'll help us. Colossians 3 says, "Whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not unto men." Now, let me just get where we are right now. Somebody will play the piano. Somebody will lead the singing. Somebody will do the ushering. Somebody will do the preaching. What's that passage saying? It says, put your heart in it. Get your heart in it. You know, whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as unto the Lord. Most people that I know who get invited to the White House get excited about that. I've been to the White House a few times, and every time I've been, I tell you, to this day, if I were going to the White House tomorrow, I would kind of be excited about it. In fact, I'll tell you this, if I were going to the White House, I'd be sure my hair was combed. I'd spiffy up. Now, I wouldn't walk in there saying, yeah, you know, don't make it, blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't do that. Let's suppose Betty and I were, suppose we were to plan another vacation and say, hey, we're going to go to the Rocky Mountains again. I'm telling you, that girl would be, I'm telling you, if I said I'm praying about it, she'd be upstairs packing, ready to go. Why? Because we had such a good, in fact, we've been twice vacation there now, and we wouldn't mind going again. Like, we've come to New England a couple of times vacationing too. And if I mentioned that, I guarantee you she'd be ready to roll. Now, what's the deal here? Just heart, heart, heart. And if you and I learn to serve the Lord, learn to just get up every day and do what we do as unto the Lord, put our heart into it, what a difference it makes. Here's another Bible principle. James chapter 4 says, therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Now we've got the Ten Commandments and other things that tell us some things not to do. But this verse says, if you know to do something that's good and right, and you don't do it, then it's a sin of omission. You've omitted it, and God's going to chalk it up and say, hey, you should have and you didn't. So it's a Bible principle. When we know the right things to do, and out of cowardice or out of just don't care or whatever, if we don't do it, the Lord said, hey, You're not behaving like you should. Here's another Bible principle. I like this one, Philippians 4. This one says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Now, notice what it says. Think on these things. If it's true, think on it. If it's honest, think that way. If it's just and pure and lovely and of good report and virtuous, think that way. You say, well, why is it important to get the thinking right? Very simply, your doer never does anything your thinker hadn't thought of. And if you get your thinker thinking right, your doer will do right. And so he says, think on these things. And if it's true, if it's honest, if it's just, if it's virtuous, just that's why, you'll forgive me. But that's why you don't watch trashy TV. I spend about half the year in motel, about half of my year, I'm somewhere spending the night in a hotel or a motel. And every hotel that I stay in has trash packages. Yep. But now, I'm not bragging on me. I'm just telling you. I've logged in some of this. So when I'm in the hotel, I do not. I've promised myself. I promised the Lord. I promised Betty. I do not watch HBO and some of that other garbage stuff that's on TV. I just don't watch it. If I'm surfing, hunting for something to watch on TV, and this time of year it's either baseball or baseball or baseball. I'm sorry, you'll think I'm not a good Christian, but I like baseball. I've played it a lot, and I enjoy it a lot, and I'm a baseball fanatic. Doesn't make me a good Christian, but I hope it doesn't keep me being one either. But I do not watch the trash. It's not going to. And I don't do it when I'm at home. Maybe I've made covenants with each other about that. You say, why? Because we're going to keep our thinker thinking right. You say, well, I'm a strong Christian. I can handle it. No, you can't. It'll erode your value system if you do it. So it's a Bible principle. Just think on the right things, and that'll get you headed right. Now, there's other principles, many of them in the Bible. Hebrews 10 says, forsake not the assembling of yourselves together as the manner of some is, and even so much the more as you see the day approaching. That's a Bible principle. Passages like Matthew 4:19, Jesus said, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. What does that tell me? It means if I follow the Savior, I'll be fishing for folks. And conversely, I apply to myself and say, hey, buddy, if you're not fishing, you're not following. Because Jesus said, when you follow me, I'm going to have you looking for somebody else that you can get to follow me. So what's going on here? We're talking about Bible principles. And this verse, number 3, says, if we keep judgment, that is, we get the right judgment on things. And I don't have time to chase it here now, but by the way, you know one of the most abused verses in all the Bible is, judge not lest you be judged. That is the most often quoted verse in Christian circles these days, and the people who quote it basically don't have any idea what it means. That obviously means unjust judgments. If you look at me and say, hey, you're a little short guy, and I'm going to like you because you're short, that would be unjust. Now, you may say, well, I don't like what you said a while ago. And maybe you'd have a point. I don't know. But when Jesus said to don't judge, he was talking about unjust judgments. See, how do you know that? Because there's so many things in the Bible. And the same New Testament tells us that we're to judge ourselves. It says it pointedly. It also says, he that is spiritual judgeth all things. And by the way, almost every minute of your waking day, you're making judgments. You decide to get, I mean, it's just a matter of making choices, making decisions. You decide what you're going to do for breakfast. You decide where you're going to eat lunch. I mean, you decide where to stop and get gas in your car. You're making judgments all of the time about things. And that applies in every arena of our life. So when this passage says, keep judgment, it's saying nail some things down and hang on to them. And then live by those things and go do those things at all times. You say, well, somebody was ugly to me at all times. Somebody mistreated me at all times. I was treated unfairly at all times. They got my order wrong at McDonald's at all times. See, that'd be ye kind. That applies when they get the order wrong at Wendy's or Burger King or whatever. I mean, I see people come back in those places and throw the stuff on the counter. Man, you put ketchup on my hamburger, and I told you I'm allergic to ketchup. And you know, they don't realize that the little gal or the guy standing there, that's somebody's daughter, somebody's son, or somebody's mother. But as Christians, we got a principle. I mean, okay, so they got the order wrong. We go back in, we can tell them that without acting like a heathen. You say, well, I know what to do. The Bible says, be ye kind, and that works at McDonald's and Wendy's and Burger King and Taco Bell and whatever else. Don't you love it that we don't have to invent life? God's given us all this stuff to work with, And the interesting thing is, you know, everything he tells us is the best for us. Why should we flounder around and do all this goofy stuff that's not going to produce and it's not going to work out right? I mean, I like formulas that work. And he says very clearly here, you keep judgment and do righteousness at all times, there's blessing that comes with that. That means God's going to help you. And you're going to like what comes from it. Well, there it is. Right principles need to be taught, and then we can develop upright practices. All right, we're right at time. If that clock on the wall is anything near right, we're just right at the right time. And we're going to take a little break here, and then we're going to have church. Amen. Dear Lord, thank you.